Yeah, dude, they really do. And that's why when you see guys like LeBron James and how they lead, you know, yeah, he has a tight ship, but he has fun. You know, you see him playing basketball with the guys, you see him joking around, you see him going to his kids' games. You know, the NBA isn't his only life. And, you know, it's something that we've been talking a lot about, Mark and I, of really trying to figure out really the trajectory of where LeBron James is going to look to send his kids when they're done. And Mark and I have told before, we have friends that are executives on NBA teams. No surprise there, guys, right? But we contacted one of them to ask them where they thought that, you know, Bronny James would end up going. And it was really interesting because all I said was, I got one question for you and just tell me what you think, you know, like. And he sat there and he's like, all right. And I said, all right, Bronny James going to the NBL. And he said, if I was LeBron James, that would be the league that I was looking at. As a father, looking at that league, looking at how they play, they have to have 1 year in a professional league. The NBL would be the place that I would want to send my kid. So with that being said, Mark, do we think there's a chance, and I personally think there's a massive chance that LeBron James and Bronny James have had the talk that of the NBL as being better than going to college, as being better than going to the G League? Because again, you're look at LaMelo Ball. Look at what he did for his name. Look at what, you know, Josh Giddey has done for his name. Like when guys go to the NBL to play for a year, they open up their opportunity to have more fans. Is this something that you're saying, like the NBA executive is saying, that there's more than a chance that this happens?
So I like how you defined it as the talk, right? It's like at a certain age, every father has to sit down with their son and explain to them, like, your body's changing, you're becoming a man, and college basketball just isn't as good as the NBL. And I know. Don't get mad at me. Don't go tell your friends that I'm disgusting. But I know that you've always cheered for the same teams, and I know it's going to be really hard for you. But if you want to be the type of man that you can be in the NBA, you need to go play in Australia for a year. And it's, I know it seemed like that's the only place LaMelo Ball could play, and that's why he went there. But really, it's actually a great place to go and prepare yourself. And I understand it's a very long flight from LA, but you'll have Instagram. It's okay. You'll be all right. And when you come back, you'll be a better basketball player. I know it won't help you become more famous here, but you have a lot of followers in Australia, and maybe you could even sell a shoe quite a bit there. You know, I mean, that's the type of conversation every dad needs to have with their kid right around, I don't know, how old is he? I'm guessing he's like 17 now.
So this is going to be, he's coming up in 2023. He's going to be going to college, and in 2024, he's eligible for the draft. So,
all right. So yeah, I mean, it's an important conversation to have before he goes out into the world and, you know, starts fucking up everything. Right.
I will let you know that, not that LeBron James and I have conversations at all, and I'm not saying that at all, but for me, I'm looking at this as almost a done deal. Bronny James going to the NBL.
You know, last time I heard there was a done deal from you about LeBron James was when you were telling me that he was going to go to LA, and the reason you told me was some rumors you had heard about some prep school that his kids were supposedly going to attend. And I was like, all right, sure, whatever. Like, but it happened. So
money don't lie. When you put $150,000 down on a school in LA,
man, you've got good sources, bro. I'll just put it that way.
You got good sources.
Yeah. TMZ could use you around their staff. But at this stage right now, when we're talking about him, I think it's the right choice. I think one of the reasons I think it's the right choices, you know, some of the stuff I've been listening to Andrew Gazer talk about, and
he's such a great talker.
Yeah.
Man.
And like his
talker, such a great
communicator,
yeah, whatever,
right?
You guys get me.
And like just explaining the system and how the systems that they implement at young ages. And you can see it with Josh Giddey's game. One of the things that one of our YouTube listeners mentioned was like in the AFL, which is something that Josh Giddey played you know, Australian rules football until he was like 15. Like, they really encourage you to move into space. And
yeah,
then they can do. Pass the ball in space. And you see that with Giddey all the time. In the past, I talked about like Pete Maravich and how Maravich would begin the fast break generally by a dribble. And he was really good at passing, but like, he wanted the team going. And as soon as his first game he played, like, it changed the pace of the team. Like, I went back and watched, you know, the first game he got any action. He came on off the bench, and it was incredible. And it was very similar to the way Giddey got the team running, but Giddey was always leading with a pass into open space, leading a teammate into that spot and starting the fast break that way. So it started to make more sense, like, where Giddey's game was coming from. But then hearing Andrew Gazer talk on the Thunder Universe podcast about, like, implementing cutting and back, you know, understanding that, like moving without the ball is a critical part, and learning how to properly pass, the angles of the ball, like, and teaching the kids at young ages how to properly cut and how to properly pass to a cutter. He said some people criticize them because it's like, oh, you're taking away the free movement of the game. But Josh Giddey really gives him a lot of credit, or that system a lot of credit, for teaching him how to get open and understand how to get the ball to somebody who's open when they're open. So I look at it like, yeah, if you were judging, you know, another year of high school, which isn't really what it is, but a year of college, a year of G League, and you say, like, what are the skills that you're going to come away with? I would say you need those skills being taught in the NBL more than you need the skills that are being taught in college basketball, which you're going to be talking about a lot of like, seemingly unimportant defensive concepts that you get taught because they're system concepts, and offensive systems that don't really apply to the NBA either, but it's something that a coach has figured out how to, you know, implement and make sure that every generation of players can run a version of it, and they keep getting 20 plus wins. And that's, you're just coming in to get plugged into that system, and whether or not you are successful is whether or not you can adapt to that system. I look at the NBL as, like, flipping everything on its head and saying, like, if you have that opportunity, I mean, even a player like Usman Jang, who we don't talk about nearly as much.
Sure.
But look at what he was able to do. Was he ready when he got there? No, but was he ready when he left? Yes. Well, what else the fuck do you want from it? You know what I mean? Yeah. And he started out with limited minutes for the Breakers, but they ramped it up. Like, a lot of times you'll see players in college who get started off on the wrong foot and they never get another chance, or they don't get that chance on the right terms.
Or they end up being a 20th pick.
Right. And then it doesn't go anywhere, right?
Exactly. You're right, man. That's a really good point. You got to look at, if a college athlete starts off with a shitty year, which is always a coin flip, they hurt their chances of being a top 10 pick. Yeah. Now, Jang started off a rough year, but he finished strong, right?
Right.
And we were able to look at that, and he was a top 10 pick.
Well, and because why? Because the type of player that you need to be assertive and dominant in college is, you need to be a man amongst boys. But the reason Jang struggled early is because he was a boy amongst men. And when he was able to adapt to a man's game and be successful in a man's game, it's a hell lot easier to say that guy's going to be successful than a guy who's just going out there and being a man amongst boys.
Sure. True,
every time.
True.
So
you're right.
I mean, we just got done watching the game, the Adelaide 36ers. That was fun against the Thunder. The 36ers had a big game beating the Suns. And, you know, at that point, their trip was a success.
Oh, yeah.
You know, they're in their preseason.
Absolutely.
You know, they're probably going to get a hero's welcome going back home. And they fucking deserve it.
Fuck yeah, they do, man. Like, I look at the 36ers. That has to be, you know, a huge thing for the organization in general, recruiting wise, and all the above. I mean, look at how everything's gone for them. And I look at Josh Giddey and Gaze, and I look at these people that are coming from the program and that were part of the program, and it makes me excited. I look at this game, I look at it as, you know, two different halves, if you will. But you had Trey Mann just doing some manly things out there. And then, Lindy Waters, man. Lindy Waters continues to impress. Listen, guys, I don't think I've hidden the whole fact that I like Lindy Waters. Like, I think that he's one of my favorite players on this team. Hands down, has a ton of potential. Last night, he had 3 steals to go with his 23 points. Truly spectacular night for him. But I absolutely love Lindy Waters. And my buddy Mark Malone, he wrote me after the last podcast just to let me know that we know somebody that was Lindy Waters' roommate as a freshman. And kind of cool. So that would be Luke Major, was a roommate of Lindy Waters his freshman year. And it was kind of cool to be able to hear that because, I don't know, man, it's nice to hear the connections that you have with people. And Luke is somebody that both Mark and I had the privilege of coaching. Is that correct, Mark? You coached Luke?
Never his actual team, but I coached him in summer camps. And So I like to take all the credit for his success. No, I'm just kidding. It was fun to watch him.
He was a walk-on for OSU. Yeah. His freshman year, which is cool, so good deal.
So we've got a couple of things that we want to talk about from the game against the Sixers, but we also have stuff to talk about from the Dallas game. So we've got two games to cover. First of all, though, let's talk about Lindy Waters. Like you mentioned, he made 6 threes against the 36ers. And as the game went on, you really got to see, okay, what was probably going to be like our G League two-way lineup. And there was a lot of J. Will, Lindy Waters, Amarui, and a few guys like that. I can't remember all the guys. But as you got to see, like, with Waters, his spot-up threes are amazing. But I've started noticing his footwork to get into his spots is improving like crazy. So 6 threes the other night.
Oh, yeah.
And he's finding ways to...
So fast.
Right, because if he does the work in advance with his feet, then when he's open, he can shoot. And a lot of times, I think he last year, he was open and he wasn't prepared, right? And they would take away the gap so incredibly quickly that, that's what this year is all about. And I wonder, like, with Lindy, I'm looking at it and saying, like, okay, so Ty Jerome is now, we've seen him over with the Warriors, right? And Théo Maledon, I think he's with the Rockets right now, as far as I know, right? So,
yeah.
My question really becomes, like, did Lindy Waters ensure his spot on the team? Like, I know he's still a two-way player, and he wasn't particularly competing it, but it seems like he outplayed them.
Do you remember us talking about Lindy Waters after the season, and you and I were like, we would rather keep Lindy Waters than, like, most of the other guys that were question marks? And I remember I told you, I was like, I would rather keep Lindy Waters than Maledon.
Yeah, it was hard to say. I mean, we invested a pick in Maledon. He was younger. We helped him mature, but then here we are.
Lindy Waters, bro, when you have a shot that pure and a somebody that can play three positions on defense and be good at it, you got to roll the dice, man. You got to see if this guy can pull out.
Speaking of pulling out, no, I'm just kidding. Trey Mann, though.
Dude, all
right. He was knocking down shots, bro. He knocked down 8 threes, bro. 8 threes.
I have like tons of notes, right? Yeah. But the one note that I kept on circling was the three-pointer with 6 minutes and 12 seconds in the third. Trey Mann steps back 3.
Yeah.
One of the purest shots, sickest shots that I've seen in a long time. And we're going to find it in a second because it's the third period and we're coming up in the third period.
He's always ready to shoot. And
what?
Even when he puts the ball on the ground, like, he's going to be ready to shoot so fast. And
oh, yeah. Every time.
It's like his footwork's improved quite a bit too. And like, yeah, great. Great to watch Trey Mann become.
Look at that.
Yeah. I would say.
Back. I mean.
Like, look, I get it. We didn't want to overreact to the preseason, but I would say he has a chance to establish himself as a truly elite step-back shooter.
Next three here. All right. Next three here.
All right. So.
Right here. Watch this. Boom. You see how fast that was, bro? Yeah. I mean, go again.
It's the move that Watch gets him open, too. He got the double, and then he back
right?
behind the back dribble.
Crossover.
Neither one of the guys are taking responsibility for him, so he steps to the line and steps back.
And it's just a slight move, but it's so fast. Like, that's the shot that he is going to score a lot on.
Right.
In the NBA. It's the crossover coming back to the three-point line, and the defender's not going to be able to guard him up at the three-point line. If he tries to, it's over because he's going to drive to the hole. I got so excited about that three-pointer and the way that he was able to execute it. I'm telling you guys, Trey Mann's special, and having him on the team is going to be a hell of a way to watch this team.
Man. And it was great to see Antonio's Cleveland out there.
Yeah.
Former G League player.
Dude, for real.
Definitely happy about that.
We had a bunch of guys. Usman Jang didn't play. We didn't see.
He sprained his ankle, I think, the other day. I don't know if they reported that, but yeah.
Who else were we missing? J-Dub. Illness, it said.
Yeah, strep throat is what I heard them say. So.
Ooh, shit.
Maybe it was those fried Oreos.
J-Will stepped up, though, man. Did you see his stat line?
Yeah, dude. Nice stat line. He went 1-for-1, 12 rebounds, 6 assists.
1-for-1.
1 assist.
Hell yeah, baby.
1 steal, 1 block. I'm sorry, 6 assists, 1 steal, 1 block. There we go.
The 6 assists, though, he threw an alley-oop to Omorari.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh, bro. That was truly spectacular. That's the type of thing that you're looking at and you're saying, okay, seeing these type of plays and seeing how these guys there's another one. Jalen Williams, I guess, had a bunch to Omomari.
Yeah, it's 6 assists in total, so.
But just watching him, how he looks at the floor, you know?
Yeah.
Like, he just watches it. He watches everything going by. He watches as he's going to get the ball. He's watching as he's dribbling it, you know, like,
yeah,
he's constantly had a head on a swivel. You know, that was it right there. That was the dunk I was telling you about. Backdoor cut.
Right.
Here's another one. Alley-oop right here. Or that wasn't the alley-oop.
So one thing I've noticed about him at this stage is like how much more comfortable he's already gotten. Like early on when we saw him out there playing, it was like there was a bit of I don't know. Like everybody, they don't know where they're supposed to be, right? And they're trying to figure out everything that's going on out there. And I feel like with him, it went from that in the first couple of games, especially in the preseason, right? To all of a sudden now we're looking at him and we're saying like that dude absolutely is comfortable. He's leading his teammates to where they should be. And he's communicating at a high level, and it's only been a few days. I'm really impressed with him. Definitely, big time.
Hit up Jeremiah Robinson Earl had the assist he had. That had to be the alley-oop that I was talking about.
All right.
I'm going to get Jeremiah Robinson Earl and Jalen Williams mixed up on their passes because they have a very similar. Right? Is this the alley-oop? I don't know.
No, that was it, dude. Sorry to move that in front of
there. Never mind.
All right.
No, it's I'm gonna think about it.
Yeah, I'm not worried.
Somebody threw an alley-oop to Omorari, and we'll find out who it was in Little L.
I'm not worried, man. So that 36ers game, overall, it wasn't really that close. We didn't get to see Josh Giddey for quite as long as anybody had hoped. You know what I mean? But
true.
At this stage, we got to go ahead and talk a little bit about the other game, bro. The one we played against Dallas, we did not get the win, but there are some things worth mentioning in this game, right?
Yeah, man.
First of all, I thought Kenny Hustle played outstanding. Like, really, really
great
dude.
Yes, he did.
So, he didn't play out in the other game, and I'm looking at a stat line, 1-for-4. Like, what specifically do I think he did that was so exceptional? I don't know, man. You know what I mean? It's like his ability to move to the right spots, you know? I mean, he just gets open.
Yeah.
He does it on the rebounds. He does it defensively. He finds ways to be at the right spot. But, I mean, 1-for-4, I'm looking at him like, why did I feel like he had such a great game? Because he's a leader, right? Like, he's like what you were saying about Draymond earlier. Like these guys go out and they do the right things and they help your team win. And you got to build your team around these guys.
Yeah, he shoots a high percentage. You know what I'm saying? free throws he does really well at with, and then he does everything else. He gets offensive rebounds, he gets defensive rebounds, he gets assists, he gets steals, he gets blocks, he takes charges. I mean, he is all over the place. He impacts the game in every single possible way.
Right.
So when you see a guy like that, you're like, okay, that's what we need our team to be like. Because if you have six or seven of those guys that impact the game in such a massive way, you're going to have the one of the best defense in NBA – or defense. You're going to have one of the best benches in NBA history.
Yeah.
And that's just going to be the way it is.
You know, one of the things – because we didn't get to see him in the second game, Usman Jang – you know, he went 3-for-6, and I want to go ahead and just highlight a few of these real quick. You know, against the the Mavericks, one of them was at corner three. It's a big time shot. Like, that's what you're gonna need from a guy like him to start out his career. He also just moves so fluidly in the full court, the ability to, you know, couple dribbles up the court and finish at the rim. And we talked about it before. He just does not seem like the type of player that is going to spend a lot of time in the G League. He's got a lot of different weapons. He's comfortable going to those weapons. Teams have to figure out a way to defend him. And, like, that's, like, sure, they might send him down to the G League because it's like, okay, it's imperative at this stage for us to ensure that he figures out how to be the type of guy that goes out and gets 25 points in a game or something like that. But in the end, he doesn't look like he needs the G League. It'll just be kind of like polishing off different elements of his game.
And this is where I feel like Jang this is where I feel like Jang is going to be at. I feel like they're going to have him, you know, 15, 20, 25 minutes a game. Like, they have to have this young man in the game at all times. When I say all times, it's like those questionable minutes of, oh, are they going to stick out Baisley, or they're going to stick out this person or that person? No, they're going to have to stick out Jang. Jang needs those minutes more than anything. The reason is because I look at him and I'm like, okay, how many players in the NBA have the type of talent that Jang has?
It's not many.
I'm still thinking.
Not many.
like the height, the talent, the defensive presence, the way he attacks the hole, the way he shoots. Like, listen, there's very few guys. So if he's not playing 15, 20 minutes a game, then, you know, you're going to see something happen where, yes, he's going to have to go to the G League because something happened and they got to fix it. But for him not to play 15, 20 minutes a game means that he's going to have to come out of preseason and just start throwing up bricks and, you know, turnovers and stuff like that. And I don't see that happening. So I don't see that there's going to be any stint at all with the G League for him, just because I feel like he's going to be such an impact player right off the bat.
Yeah, dude, I agree. Let's watch a couple of J-Dub highlights real quick. I think there's some things we can say about his game.
J-Dub.
He went 3-for-9. But still, like, in the end, you can see, like, okay, out there, he just got that ball and played bully ball with some, you know, a veteran, it looked like. I'm not sure who he was playing against. But he's got the ability to shoot up over top of people. He's got a comfortable runner. He's comfortable creating enough space off the dribble to get a shot off. And he can get to the basket if he has a step. I mean,
dude, how many – he's playing point guard, right, for the second team.
Right.
How many point guards – are going to be able to physically be able to stop him?
He's big, man. He's
that our second team
he's
point
got
guards.
The size of a forward, for sure.
Dude, it's I can't even tell you guys, like, our second team, like, the way that we're running guys right now. Like, last night we started four guys that were sophomores, and Baisley, right? Yeah. Like, this is how it's going to be, you know? Like we're going to see a lot of combinations of four guys that are sophomores, four guys that are freshmen, and Shea, four guys that are sophomores, and Dort. You know, like, we're going to see this a lot. And it's going to be fun because you're going to have two different teams, and you have right there, you have 10 deep.
Yeah.
And that's not even talking about Baisley. That's not even talking about these other guys, Lindy Waters. Like, that's what's insane about this. Is this team is so incredibly deep. And when people are going to look at this team and say, all right, well, yeah, you guys average 30 something points a game from your second team. That's because of Kenny Hustle, or that's because of this. It's no, because when you're putting and designing a team, there's different, aspects of it. You look at baseball, you look at the bullpen, you look at closers, you look at, relief pitchers and all this other stuff, right? Mm-hmm. It's the same thing for the NBA. Like, we have 12, 14 guys that we're going to be able to count on at a different game or different games, because Lindy Waters is going to be able to shoot the lights out against a team that struggles guarding the 3-point range. But he's not going to be able to necessarily shoot the lights out at a team that's a high, defensive presence out there on the 3-point range.
Right.
Playing at a high level. He's not going to shoot necessarily as well. So are you going to go to some, Lindy Waters off the bench, or are you going to go to somebody else that's more, that's better at attacking the hole in those situations, because that could be their weakness. So this is all about the team effort and recognizing with Coach D, like he does. And this is not like old school NBA where you have five guys and then your sixth and seventh guys, are okay. Like that, this is not how it is anymore.
Yeah.
In order to be able to play late into a season and get to the playoffs being healthy, you have to have a massive bench out there helping you out. And that's what we have.
Yeah, for sure, man. I got a couple of made shots by Josh Giddey in this game against Dallas that was played in Tulsa. I think it's really interesting to watch just his hit the creativity he uses to get his shots and just his creativity in finishing around the basket, right? So they gave him a goaltend on that one. But, it's that Euro step, but it's also ability to finish with both hands. He's got that flick that looks a little like a Dirk move almost, right? He caught the ball with 1 foot down, and he never put the second foot down from, they call it the dunker spot, the step out area. I just think in this game with Dallas, he got really aggressive, getting downhill, getting to the spots he wanted. I think he has some comfort against Dallas. It's the team probably has had some of the most success he's had out there. But I feel like this was his best offensive display as far as shot display type. Like, he did knock down some threes in the other game, but this game to me, spoke to me, because this is the type of shit he's going to be going out there and doing from day one. We need it. Get downhill. Isn't that what we saw Shea doing, most of the season last year? And we know when Giddey gets to the spot where he's picked up the ball, it's not dead. You know what I mean? It's just not.
No, you're right. And that's why we are just incredibly lucky to have Josh on this team, because if you look back in the NBA history, very few players have the abilities that Josh has really shown. Like, the way that he's been able to keep the dribble alive, and these are things that we just saw his rookie year. So he just understands the floor like nobody else's business. And I think that has a lot to do, going back to the way he was raised with playing footy, the AFL.
Yeah.
That
pass was a perfect example.
So massive.
He moved with the pass, Trey Mann, into the open spot. That Trey didn't even know where the open spot was until he moved to where the ball was going. Right? Yep. He was even confused.
Exactly,
he was where is he passing the ball? Right here. He thinks it's coming to him. Then he realizes he's got to reposition, and he steps into a shot. That's leadership right there. And here's the thing with this game, there's only 3 assists. And I remember watching the game being kind of bummed, because a number of his best passes didn't turn into assists because they weren't made shots. So it was overall, I think it was a really good game for him. But
yeah, absolutely.
The highlights, it's hard to make a highlight when it's just a good pass. You need someone to make that shot.
And that's it. I mean, I think that it's going to take time, but the rest of the team will catch on pretty fast. And obviously the players that we have on the floor are going to help them out a lot more. And I look at this team and I say, at what point are we going to move on from certain players, And it's going to happen pretty fucking fast, guys. There's going to be a moment where it's going to be hey, this player hasn't played in a while. Well, guess what? That's it. Guys like Baisley are going to either have to step up their game in a massive, massive way. And listen, Bazley, to me, if he learns to have that Draymond Green chip,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
He could be that perfect person like that. But he has to change so much of his game and focusing on just being a defensive presence. And that's where I don't know if he could do that right now in his career. I hope he can change. I hope he can do that, because I like Bazley a lot. But when you're looking at these guys like Osman Jang, and you're looking at JRE, and you're looking at J Will, and you're looking at J Dub, and you're looking at all these other guys that are going to demand that position and playing in those different positions, you know, you got to wonder how thin is his ice that he's standing on right now. And I got to say, I think it's kind of thin in a way. I think Sam is still in love with the idea of having a Bazley, because here's the reality. If Bazley, as he grows, and he's one of your bench players, I mean, you're in great position, because Bazley can do some amazing things out there. His ability to see where the ball is going, his ability to block shots, it's pretty special. But again, that's where the growth I want to see with Bazley this year.
No, I noticed that he played better against the 36ers, and you can point to different reasons and say maybe it's because it wasn't an NBA team. But what I look at is more like the difference was, it's like he does all the hard work. We've talked about this in past episodes. But when it comes to finishing, like, he hasn't had the upper body strength or the lower body strength to finish through contact. And yeah, there's always contact. It's just
sure
what they consider legal contact. You have to be strong to, like, at least get the defender to move out of his position, right? So yeah, when I look at him now, like, he's building up, he's looking stronger, but more importantly, he's not looking to do it all himself. If he gets the open spot, he like breaks down the defense and he picks up the dribble, a good pass is a good finishing move. And sometimes you just don't have the balance to take the right shot. We noticed Shea is a master at that. He gets the defense to commit and they're in a spot where they can't recover, and he's almost showed commitment to shooting, but he hasn't. But he's done enough to make them commit as the defensive players. That's where Bazley is. If he just gathers himself after the spin move and finds the open guy, because there's somebody open under the basket when he drives, he draws so much attention. And that's a transition. It's not like I'm hoping I see it. I've seen it. The question is, can he maintain it? Because that's the difference between being a guy that coach is like, okay, we got to get him out of there, or, okay, you're a difference maker. You make the right plays. You didn't get the dunk, but you made the pass to somebody who did get the dunk. J. Will, this last game, we noticed, like, you look at his plays, like, you can't help it. You look at, okay, well, Lindy Waters, 3. Well, there's a J. Will rebound and assist. Here, this, and J. Will is in the middle of all this good stuff happening. I feel like Bazley has that capacity, but at the same time, like you said, it's going to take some adjustments, and you're not sure if you can bet on that, and you're looking at these young guys coming up, and you're like, they have this stuff baked into their game.
Yeah, it is. It's insanity to see that we have all these guys that are coming up, like J. Will, ability to take charge in the hustle plays that he does. You've got JRE. I mean, we just signed Kenny Hustle. I know he didn't come up through our system, but we just signed Kenny Hustle. These are the guys that create championships. You know, like, you can say, pick your team, any team that you want in the last, you know, 50 years of the league, of any league, and you're going to find those guys that are what you call the championship pieces. Could Michael Jordan have ever won without Steve Kerr? Could Kobe have ever won without Shaq and without Paul Gasol? You know, like, there's always those players that are in there that are, yes, stars, but more so, create everything for everybody. You know, like, they're not going to be your number one or take the spotlight. Like, Shaq took the spotlight from Kobe, right? But Kerr didn't take the spotlight from Michael. You know, like, you think of Tim Duncan and Robert Horry, and, you know, you got these guys that you need out there on the court. And I look at it, man, and I don't know. We've got so many of them. You know, we've got Kobe with Fox. You know, we've got Kobe with Fisher. You know, we got all these guys that you look at and you're like, holy shit. Like, I can see Kenny Hustle being that. I can see J Will. I can see JRE. I can see Dort. I can see, and the list goes on for us, man. And it's like, what the fuck? Like, that's when it's like, okay, what we're watching being built right now is something like we've never seen before. Where can this go? Where can this take us? Because there's no way of explaining it except saying this is how you build a championship caliber team, period. This is what you tell your kids the rest of their lives of, I was able to watch this. I was able to see how this was being built. This is what you say, because you get one opportunity of being part of something like this.
Yeah. And it's never, I think some people look at it.
Because people will copy you afterwards.
Yeah. And they'll be like, oh, well, it was, you know, history will make it seem like it was destined to happen the whole time. But there was a lot of questions about even who the guys would be along this journey. You know, who stepped up and who found, like, a way on. And we know, like, at first it was pretty easy to get a spot on this team comparatively. Now there are good players who aren't making it, and
yeah,
you know, that's a part of the journey everybody's got to go on. So it's exciting,
fun, man.
We kind of sum it up usually saying that somehow, you know, this isn't a tank, but this is somehow a culture of winning in the face of losing. And we've seen teams who had losing get tattooed on them and they could never escape it. And this team, when like every game you listen, if you listen to the other announcers, they're always like, we know how hard the Thunder are going to play. We know that they're going to play for four quarters. We know that no lead is safe. Okay, great. Because that's how we want to be. You know, like,
yeah,
let's home grow this next level of talent with that in their DNA. And like you said, just ride that fucker for as long as we can. Like, we did it before, but in the end, you get close to that promised land and you can't reach it. Hopefully, you learn some fucking lessons and run the ball. Thank you, Richard Sherman.
100%, baby. 100%. I'm pumped, man. I'm pumped that we had an opportunity to talk to one of our guys that we knew. Played for our dad, Josh, you know.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say your last name, Josh, but we'll say Josh K. Yeah. All right, you can say it. All right, there you go.
Say not, say and
yeah, it's just nice, man. It's nice to be able to reach out to some people and recognize that we know them. And it goes back to every single time that I think about it. I know I have players that I used to coach and we used to play with, and you know, there's a family association with you guys. So if you listen to our podcast and you're, you know, connected to us and we haven't talked to you in years, please reach out to us. We'd love to hear from you guys. I literally get text messages after every single podcast by, you know, three or four people. And that's after they get released talking about the things I talk about. So, again, it means a lot to us when we hear from people we know. We've been hearing a lot from our Australian listeners, and it's really amazing to be able to hear just what the knowledge they're partaking on us about the NBL. And it's just a powerful, powerful community that we're creating. And it's we're part of, I mean, I shouldn't say we're creating, but we're part of this amazing community with the Oklahoma City Thunder that we're using our pod and our YouTube videos and different things like that to be able to connect to you guys. So, you know, thanks again for listening to us. I really appreciate each and every single one of you guys.
That's it, baby. Thanks for joining us. We will see you Monday.